The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host. I am Neil Pollack. I am the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We are the United States' and the world's leading culture and arts publication. We publish articles about books and film and streaming TV and so much more. And we are excited to bring you an interesting show this week. I'm going to talk to contributor Pablo Gallaga, who, along with me, attended South by Southwest here in Austin, Texas, last week. And if you listen to people talking on social media, you'd think that it was the last South by Southwest ever. But in fact, it is not. It's just being consolidated. But there are changes afoot, and Pablo and I are going to talk about those changes and also talk in depth about what we saw and heard at this week's festival. It's a good conversation, and I encourage you to stick around for it. First, I am going to talk to film critic Stephen Garrett. I'm going to submit him to a lie detector test, which he's going to flunk very badly. We're going to talk about Steven Soderbergh's new movie, Black Bag, which is in theaters now and is the kind of movie that there should be more of in theaters. Sort of light entertainment for adults, starring adults. No children. I don't think there's a single child in this entire movie, which is a real switch for movies. So Stephen will be here right after we play you this trailer from Black Bag, and then we'll talk about the movie.
There's a traitor in the house.
There are five names on there. Your wife's one of them.
Love you. What's on the menu?
I have a game. One of them is a liar. I want to know which. Have you ever killed another person? Yes or no?
Yes.
Oh, my.
Have you ever betrayed your country?
Only if I had to.
Would you lie for me, George?
If you needed my help.
Would you kill for me?
Answer yes or no. Is your name Stephen Garrett?
I'm gonna tighten my sphincter muscle and say...
Answer yes or no.
No. What does the poly say?
It says you're lying.
What? Ow!
You're bad at this.
I'm bad at this.
Yeah, you're bad
I'm bad at lying. I would not be a good spy.
You would not be a good spy. You totally ruined the bit. I was going to ask you five or six questions. and then do a sphincter tightening joke. But it's okay.
I just went to tightening my sphincter. Yeah, that's kind of like... That's on brand.
That's really all you're in it for. So we're talking about... the new Steven Soderbergh movie, Black Bag, which is in theaters this week and will probably be streaming by the time you hear this recording. That's just kind of the way movies are going these days. I have a question for you, Stephen Garrett. I thought Steven Soderbergh retired from filmmaking a decade or more ago. Didn't he?
He did. Yes, he did. Yes.
But he makes two movies. He makes two or three movies a year.
Well, I think he found a loophole. I had an opportunity to interview him back then when he was talking about retiring. This is like the late aughts, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he was, I think it was during Che. He was promoting Che, his two-part movie about Che Guevara.
Yeah.
And he said, I've got a few or more things I want to make, and then I'm going to retire, like around 2012. And he said, the industry has just changed and I don't have the freedom to make movies the way I want to. And he's a restless guy. He's a restless filmmaker. I feel like every movie that he commits to doing is one where he is wants to solve a problem, or he's confronted with some obstacles that he wants to somehow kind of overcome. He wants to challenge himself every time he makes a movie. So,
all right. So he lied. He lied. He took the polygraph about retiring.
I think it was one of those things where he realized he couldn't work on a studio level in the way that he wanted to, yeah, and that things were only going to get worse. And then I think that was right when the streaming revolution kind of started taking over or taking off, rather. And so he did retire for a couple of years. But I want to very quickly, he started making movies for the streamers because they kind of gave him a bunch of money and said, do whatever you want. And that's what he likes.
Well, you know, the thing is Steven Soderbergh is the ultimate indie filmmaker. His Sex, Lies, and Videotape was really kind of the movie that is credited with kickstarting the indie film revolution in 1989. So it's no surprise that he's doing things outside of the studio system. And yet, you know, he received $50 million to make Black Bag.
Well, it was, I think it was a $50 million pickup or something like that. Like they packaged it and they figured it out and then they sold it as a project, and then Focus said, okay, we'll commit the money. And then he did it. He's also, he started doing this thing, or maybe not start, but around the time of Logan Lucky, he had a radical experiment where he just was going to be completely transparent about how much movies cost to make, to promote, you know, to everything. And so he would, he had it all. He said he'd put it all in a big spreadsheet. I talked to him after he had stopped retiring and started making movies again. And he said, yeah, I want a radical transparency. I want people to understand how much movies make so that we can keep making movies, that we as filmmakers can control the process, you know? So,
well, one of the things I've heard about Black Bag, I have seen it, by the way, but one of the things I've heard people talk about Black Bag is that it's sort of the sort of mature adult movie. It's not an adult, it's not a porn, but it's like a movie for adults that studios used to make and they don't really make anymore because they're focused on blockbusters and IP and movies for children. And I suppose that's true, but at the same time, this movie feels a lot like something, it's like a condensed version of something you would see on a streamer, like an 8-part spy thriller you would see on a streamer on Amazon. And there's no accident, as you pointed out in your review, that Michael Fassbender, who is the lead role in this film, is in a Showtime series called The Agency and plays a similar role.
I mean, it's totally true. I think the thing is, Soderbergh's worked long form and short form, right? He did The Nick, which was 10 parts. I think The Nick is the first thing he did after he said he was going to retire from films. Mm. And then his version of retiring from films was to make a 10-part show for Showtime and direct every single episode, right? So he's clearly a workaholic. But I think he's worked in long form. He clearly has. And I think he likes short, tight projects, you know? He did that, what's that, the basketball movie he did? For
High Netflix. Flying Bird.
High Flying Bird.
High Flying Bird. And that was about a sports agent. That was on Netflix. He shot that on an iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, and that was right after he made Unsane, which was a movie, again, that he did for a very tight budget. He shot it all on iPhones and then, of course, released all the, you know, the costs in a big spreadsheet for the film. So, and both movies are really tight. He did them very quickly. I think with the basketball movie, he literally had a cut of the film ready, I think, the day after he shot the last scene in it. Mm. Or a few hours after, because he edits while he shoots. So he's just a very efficient filmmaker. And I think he just, he can do more projects if he's not committed to doing a 10-part show, you know? And I think he likes tight, efficient scripts and screenplays, you know?
Reading your review, I feel like I liked Black Bag a little bit more than you did. It. I feel like it was a very kind of clever, tight, fun thriller. It was modest.
It's funny. It is a little modest. I think if he made this on a studio level, there'd be more explosions. There'd be more, like, they'd probably have a scene in Russia where they had, like, a crew go and fly to Russia for, you know, this and that. A lot of this movie takes place in rooms, and it has to do with how much you love the characters. I think the characters, great actors working at a really, really high level. They're just really smart, and the dialogue is smart and crisp. David Koepp wrote all the dialogue. He's a, you know, screenwriter's been around for decades. I think these guys know kind of story that they want to tell, but I wasn't convinced by the main relationship, by Kate Blanchett and Michael Fassbender. I didn't find they had any chemistry at all. And I feel like that begins and ends, you know, this movie lives and dies by how much you believe them as a couple. And I really just didn't believe them as a couple. I didn't believe Michael Fassbender as someone who could be in any sort of relationship with anybody. Maybe that was my big block.
He was a bit cold. He was a bit cold, but he seemed like he was a good cook.
He seemed like a very good cook, except he let his glasses get all fogged up when he was making his chana masala, his world famous chana masala. Which, incidentally, so he laces that with some truth serum. I don't think they really told the truth at that dinner. I don't know what happened.
No, I think they were telling sort of emotional truths, but about relationships. I don't know exactly. They all certainly seemed messed up in certain ways. So, yeah, I would agree with you that I felt like, you know, Fassbender and Blanchett, well, they weren't wooden. They're not capable of delivering wooden performances. I don't think that, you know, first of all, they didn't have a lot of scenes together. No. And then when they did, you're right. It's not like the screen crackled. But what this movie did do, and you didn't really see that so much in the preview, was gives a lot of screen time to the supporting cast, and in particular, what's his name? Regé Jean Page,
yeah.
Regé Jean Page, who was best known to audiences. Well, he was in that Dungeons and Dragons movie, but he's best known as Simon from Bridgerton. Yeah. And then Marissa Abella.
Oh, she's fantastic.
Who is fantastic in this movie. She played Amy Winehouse in the Amy Winehouse biopic. And while that movie had a lot of problems, she was, I thought, tremendous in that. And she's also Yasmin from Industry, the HBO show Industry, where she is just a total standout. Look, I mean, she's a beautiful woman, very sexy woman, but that's part of her appeal, is that she understands what she's got going on. And she's also an excellent screen presence, you know, and she really knocks it out of the park in this movie, I thought.
I think part of the reason she does knock it out of the park is that you believe her emotions. She's the only character where you really feel like she's getting broken up about how she wants to be in love with somebody and she can't trust them, and she wants to have an emotional connection with somebody and she can't. And I think it's really wearing her down. And I feel like you see it in her performance in a really compelling way. And the others are so poker-faced about everything that you're just like, it's hard for me to believe that you actually care about anybody, you know? And that goes for all six of them.
I think all six of them are good. And also, you know, Pierce Brosnan is pretty good.
He's pretty great.
As the head of whatever the cybersecurity thing that they do in England. I didn't really care what they were doing. They seem to have a lot of technology. He's just a simmering cauldron of rage at all times.
He really is so surly.
Yeah.
He snarls. He's basically snarling. He looks so stuck up. It was kind of fantastic. It's a very different role for him. He usually plays like the louche, like kind of sassy spy. In this, he was like very uptight. I think he's aging well into the older, uptight Brit guy.
Yeah, he did great. And the thing is, like, you first see him at, like, through a conference room door and he doesn't even have any lines, and I was kind of squinting at the screen. I'm like, is that Pierce Brosnan?
Yeah, exactly.
And then like and then like he has like three or four scenes late in the movie, you know?
Yeah.
And with a lot of where he has to do a lot of lifting. And it's very clever the way they kind of bring him in slowly. So it's really like, it's like a seven character play. And, you know, in an era where like spy shows are so overwrought and so maximalized, it's kind of nice to see something that's just a little smooth, you know.
It's great. I mean, it's tight, it's crisp, it's efficient, it's made. I seem to be in the minority. People love this movie, or seem to really, really like this movie. I like, there's so much to like in this movie, but it just at the end of the day left me a little cold because it was a little uptight. But there's, It is like a Bentley. It is made so well. It is so good to slip into this movie and be in the hands of filmmakers who know what the hell they want to do and to see them do. And I say filmmakers because Soderbergh, of course, you know, being this kind of total filmmaker, he's the one who's directing it, editing it, and shooting it. He's doing the camera work. And David Koepp's script is great. It's like a great professional, tight, polished, like you said, adult, mature script for people who want to see sophisticated entertainment.
I think that's why this movie is getting kind of an outsized level of praise, is because it's something that's just kind of missing from your diet. It's like you haven't had that vegetable in a long time, and suddenly you get to have a taste of it again. You're like, oh yeah, I like that. You know, the problem is they used to make it, but they didn't market it at all, and it's not making a lot of money, and so, you know what? I don't know. I'm not as hopeless about the state of things as some people, but you know, it's just kind of it's weird that a movie like this is an anomaly instead of like just one of five movies that's opening this weekend.
It's exactly. And the first person to agree with you would be Steven Soderbergh, who almost completely retired from filmmaking because he thought he would not be able to make movies like this.
I'll believe he's retired when he stops releasing two or three movies a year.
That would be the sign. Fine. When that happens, yeah, I think you're probably right.
Yeah, because this is his second movie this year, and it's March. So come, Mr. Soderbergh. Methinks that does protest too much. All right, Stephen, one last lie detector test.
All right.
Before you go. Did you see Black Bag?
No, I didn't, actually. I didn't.
You're lying.
I made it all up. All right. I'm a bad liar. This is why I can't be a spy.
You cannot be a spy, but you can be a film critic for Book and Film Globe. Steven's review of Black Bag is on the site right now. You should check it out. You should check out the movie in the theater. You have probably 48 hours to do so before before it's gone.
But go, it's worth it.
Go. You'll have an adult evening. All right. Thanks, Stephen.
Sure.
As happens every March, those of us who live in Austin, Texas, are catching our breath after the South by Southwest Festival, which has just concluded and is about to go through some fairly major changes. And it's worth talking about those changes, as well as sort of reviewing what was at the Film and TV Festival this year. And I've got Pablo Gallaga, a very dedicated Austin festival goer and a Book and Film Globe contributor, on the horn to talk to me about South by. Hello, Pablo.
Hey, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Hey, so I went to South by Southwest this year as well. I go in some capacity almost every year. You had a platinum badge. I just had a film and TV press pass, which meant that even though, you know, I waited in line sometimes for 4 hours to see a movie, it still was not always easy to get into stuff. And that's the case every year, it seems like.
Yeah, it's a growing festival always, especially the film portion of it. As we'll talk about the changes, and it seems like that's been brought about by how big the Film Fest portion has become or how popular it's become. Yeah, I mean, I saw people with primary badge access turned away from some screenings. It's just the capacity. Yeah, the Alamo Drafthouse can only hold so many people. The Paramount, as well, as big as a theater as it is, and the Zach Theater, it's grown so much, and people have gotten wise to the fact that you need to have a platinum badge probably to make sure you're going to get into what you want to get into. It's rough. It's rough going out there. And yeah, you have to wait a long time in lines to, even with primary access and even with Express Pass, it's hard.
Right. But you mentioned the changes that are going on. And this is pretty significant because when South by started, it was a music festival. It was an indie rock showcase, essentially. It was just a few clubs downtown and it was just for music fans. And it was that way for quite a while. The film festival started second, but I would say that it was always kind of a sideline, but then the tech festival took over in the aughts and really blew up huge when Twitter launched at South by Southwest 1 year in the aughts. And from there, it was just like the money just poured into Austin and this festival went kind of crazy, right? I mean, it was huge parties, enormous, amazing parties, corporate activations. It was insane.
Yeah, and you'll hear the complaints from locals about how corporate it's become, and it seems like every year it gets more and more corporate-y. Yeah, I think just the film has really started to take the forefront because it's what's Instagrammable. It's the thing that people share on social that, you know, I got to meet Pedro Pascal. Like, it just, that's what people seem to care about right now, is that sort of access to celebrities and the filmmakers, and they seem to love the energy around that when they come to Austin, and it just, I guess, the conference is realizing that that's what people want.
Well, and you and I both know that Austin is a great place to live if you're a film fan. There are great movie theaters. There are festivals. There's always stuff going on. There's a ton of activity. And the music scene, and also the comedy. Let's not forget that South by Southwest has a comedy festival too, which isn't as big as, say, the Moon Tower Comedy Festival, but it is, you know, it's lively. I went to some events, and there's some lively, fun, creative stuff going on. And so the film and TV and comedy scenes have kind of eclipsed the music scene in a lot of ways. The music festival was extremely diminished this year. And I would say the tech festival, I think it's gotten a little less corporate. I think that it was much lower key because, you know, when South by Southwest Tech started, it was, you know, tech was hip and liberal, right? It was liberal coded. It was blue coded. And now it's not.
There's been that shift. Yeah. Especially this year. You know, just speaking to my experience at the fest this year, going to the expo floor, it felt smaller. It felt like there were less exhibits and things didn't stand out quite like they have in the past, like no major launches of anything of note, really. I mean, you mentioned the Twitter thing back in the day was that kind of milestone of when it felt like interactive really kind of came into its own.
Yeah.
So yeah, it felt smaller aside from film to me.
Yeah, and you know, but the film festival was lively. I mean, the lines were long. You know, South by Southwest, the movies, it's not Sundance. You know, this isn't a place where acquisitions happen. It's not Toronto or Berlin or Cannes. You know, this isn't, it resembles to some extent Fantastic Fest, which you've written about and talked about on the show. It's more for, you know, pop movies, for genre movies, for cult movies. And then some indie rock documentaries. I mean, it, you know, like the big release I saw this, the big release was Ben Affleck's The Accountant 2, which is not something you're going to see premiering at the Berlinale. And then Death of a Unicorn, which we'll talk about on the podcast in a couple of weeks. But that was like a, you know, big, dumb comedy horror movie starring Paul Rudd and Jenna Ortega. You know, these are not, these are movies for movie fans, for film fans, right? And it's like a fan fest.
Yeah, I feel it does have some of that same energy of Fantastic Fest, but to me, I've always felt like South By is a more well-rounded film festival. Like it does represent genre, but you're going to get more of those big crowd-pleasing releases. You know, you mentioned Death of a Unicorn. Drop also had its world premiere there from Blumhouse and Universal, and that's going to be a crowd-pleaser.
That looks good. That looks good, I have to say.
It was a good time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I like Megan Fahey a lot, who's the star of it. And she, you know, it's nice to see her headlining a movie. And Death of a Unicorn, again, we'll talk about it more in depth in a couple of weeks. But it has its thing.
Yeah.
And it's got a big, you know, really good cast and kind of fun practical effects. And I can't tell whether it's going to be successful or not. But, you know, it has its thing going on. And it's kind of the perfect movie for South By. I feel like the film festival really hit its current apex in 2022 when Everything Everywhere All at Once debuted at South By Southwest. That was like it's the shining moment. I saw that. I was at that screening. And that was the first time I'd been to the South By Southwest movie where I was just like, this is going to be enormous.
Yeah, I mentioned in my write-up that year that that was just a feather in the cap for the festival to have their opener go on to win the Oscar.
Yeah.
Just generally, A24 representation, some neon representation, like that's the type of film it seems like they're gunning for now.
Yeah. And, you know, South by Southwest is a great place for it because, you know, for all the changes that have been wrought in Austin and all the changes that have been wrought in South by Southwest, the actors, the directors, the people still love coming here. It's still fun to come here. South by Southwest, there's still fun parties. But the festival has shifted. It's become a film festival in a lot of ways.
And, you know, evidence of that is not just the screenings, but also the keynotes that were present in some of the sessions at the convention center, the panels. Like you had the great panel for The Last of Us, where the whole cast was present. The showrunners for Yellow Jackets, the Severance session was great. I mean, those mm-hmm. were packed. That's Ballroom D in the convention center, which that's the major change that's coming next year, is that the convention center is being rebuilt, which is basically ground, like the ground control for all of the festival, really. So what happens when that's gone?
Well, it's not being rebuilt. It's being torn down and they're going to build a new one. So there's no convention center for at least the next 4 years. And, you know, I was in the convention center. Obviously, I had to go and do some stuff there and during the festival. And, you know, part of it is that they're getting ready to tear down. But, it definitely looked long in the tooth. You know, it felt old.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, compared to some in other cities, we need a new one for sure.
Right. So here's the thing. Like, the people who are, let's say, kvetching about the changes being wrought to South by Southwest are people who first came to love South By in its indie rock years, right? The late 80s, early to mid 90s, when it really was just like a Gen X festival of music, Gen X and Boomer festival of music. And it's just not, that scene just doesn't exist anymore. I mean, there's still good music in Austin. I mean, you can see excellent independent music in Austin pretty much anytime you want, including at South by Southwest at some of the offsite events and day parties and whatnot. And I think those are still going to thrive, right? I feel like the unofficial South by Southwest showcases will continue to happen. But there's not going to be this sort of like music industry overload, because the music industry as it once needed South by Southwest doesn't exist anymore.
And I saw a post earlier today on Reddit where there is that comparison of unofficial versus official as pertains to music. Mm-hmm. And it seems like unofficial, that's the spirit of old South By, right? And that's not going to go
away. Exactly.
That won't go away. And I mean, the most corporate-y thing that I went to during this conference was there was the Sips and Sounds Music Festival, which happened the first couple nights of South By, which is sponsored by Coca-Cola, of all things. And that was a strange thing too, because I think that attendance for it maybe was, they were anticipating it wasn't going to be attended well. So they included For platinum badges, the first 1,000 people with platinum badges that claimed it got free wristbands to go to that music festival. And even so, like at Auditorium Shores, it still felt like it wasn't, you know, full. It wasn't like a full sort of concert. We went and saw Halsey that first night and it was great. But yeah, super corporate-y. I much prefer to go and see like a more intimate small show from a band I haven't heard of, and they're going to end up being my favorite band.
You know, my ultimate South by Southwest experience, I saw, you know, once saw Interpol play in a friend's backyard.
Yeah,
you know?
that is peak South by right there.
Yeah, it happened. It used to happen like that. And maybe some stuff like that will happen again. Look, I'm in my 50s. You know, I don't smoke weed anymore. So my music interest has diminished. But for me, the film festival is perfect, right? Like it's nice to have a major film festival that I can get a pass to and attend. And, you know, and just some of my best times at South by Southwest this year were just like sitting in line talking to other film fans about movies and playing movie trivia, and, you know, and it's just like, there's people who, and it's definitely not just industry people. I mean, there are people who come in just to watch movies and to be among other people who love movies. And so I have some hope that South by Southwest will continue that way. So I want to take a couple of minutes to talk about the one movie that we did see in common at South by, which was Friendship, a movie, a comedy that premiered in Toronto, but had its U.S. premiere at South by Southwest. It stars Tim Robinson and Paul Rudd. Tim Robinson from I Think You Should Leave with Tim Robinson, but it's not surprisingly, since Tim Robinson does everything in I Think You Should Leave, did not write and direct this movie.
It was written with him in mind in that lead role, and I can't imagine how this film is made otherwise. Like, who right. else plays that role? How else does this film even come to be without him mm-hmm. in that very particular mode of comedy, that sort of cringe, secondhand embarrassment, weird guy who just like is a fish out of water where everything else around him seems normal. I don't know. Like, it's kind of a strange film, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I went to the premiere, the Austin premiere at the Alamo Drafthouse on South Lamar. And Tim Robinson did pop in for a minute, but he didn't actually say anything. And Paul Rudd also popped in and didn't say anything. Rudd was here for another movie. But Andrew DeYoung, who is the writer and director of the movie, said that, like, he wrote the movie and then sent it to Tim Robinson. And then, you know, Tim Robinson, while they were making the movie, would say stuff to him like, that sounds like something Chandler would have said on Friends. So I can't say that. And a lot of the best, I mean, there's that one set piece where Tim Robinson's character Craig goes on this drug trip, and the payoff is just like insanely good.
It was by far my favorite moment. That was so good. I don't want to spoil it. It's so funny.
Yeah, huge. I wanted more. I wanted more of that. But, you know, but I think like a lot of the sort of ancillarily funny moments were ones where you just had like Tim Robinson reaction shots, that just stuff that almost felt improvised, you know, his weird scrunched up face, just the fact that he's just very confused about like who he is and what his role is in the world. He's just so funny, and he's really funny in this movie. And, you know, Paul Rudd was good too, right? Like he plays, like I said in my review, he plays sort of a gone to seed version of his Brian Fontana character from Anchorman.
Yeah, practically, right? And he's a weatherman in this, so it works out. Yeah, I mean, I've described the film to friends as just like, you're dropping an I Think You Should Leave character into the middle of almost a straight drama. Like, it certainly has its comedy bearings.
An indie film, a festival film. The fact that Tim Robinson is in it kind of changes that. And I just felt like, I like Friendship, and, you know, if people like comedy, they should give it a shot. And if they like Tim Robinson, they're really going to like this movie. I was really looking forward to this. But I felt like my thing is, we're so starved for a decent film comedy that this kind of weird, you know, indie drama, it's just a weird indie drama that becomes a comedy because it stars Tim Robinson, is somehow being hailed as the greatest work of comedy in the last, you know, 10 years. And it's just, to me, it doesn't like hold a candle to stuff like Anchorman or Talladega Nights or Superbad or even, it's better than I Love You, Man. I Love You, Man is kind of corny, but it's like kind of very, but that movie has like a similar premise. Movies like Role Models, you know, that era of comedy, Step Brothers.
But, you know, like this one doesn't seem like it's being marketed as a straight comedy either. Like yeah. It has that sort of A24 sheen to it. And it's like, the first time I saw the trailer, I was like, are they putting him into almost like a horror movie or something that's going to be more of like a like a weird thriller. And it plays out almost a little bit like that in some ways in the last act. But yeah, it's not that sort of just, you know, popcorn comedy that you used to get in the, I guess, mid 2000s.
Yeah. So, you know, it's an unusual film. I don't think it's, I can't imagine it's going to be a huge hit. It's just kind of too weird for mainstream audiences. Not like that matters. I mean, to me, like, I don't care whether it's a huge hit or not. I thought it might have been a little more mainstream than it actually was. And it was just like, it was not that. So I can't say I was disappointed, but I just, you know, I find myself wondering what like a glossy, slightly higher budget Tim Robinson vehicle would look like, you know?
I mean, maybe this is the, you know, kind of the gateway to him making a feature film of his own. I could see that happening. I mean, this has A24's backing behind it. It's going to do well. There's a installed fan base for him that's going to love the film simply because it's his character just dropped into a movie like that. So maybe that happens. Yeah.
And he is really good. He's really good. And if, you know, if Nathan Fielder is making feature films, maybe right. There is a lane for someone like Tim Robinson. Maybe we're seeing maybe this movie represents some kind of shift in the comedy zeitgeist. We shall see. And if we see it, we'll definitely see it at South by Southwest Film.
Yeah, it's, and I mentioned it in my roundup that comedy was well represented at this film festival. It was Slanted, got its world premiere there and ended up winning their jury prize. Nirvana, the band, the show, the movie. You know, that's Matt Johnson and Jay McCarroll.
I missed that.
Oh, man. It's so good. It is so good. I can't wait for more people to see it. I hope more people will see it.
I love Matt Johnson's Blackberry, so I'm hoping that'll come out. So maybe there's a little shift in the zeitgeist going on. It's hard to say. What's not hard to say is that there are big changes coming to South by Southwest, and it's also not hard to say that I'm guessing I will see you around even at a shorter South by Southwest next year.
Yeah, I'll see you there.
All right, man. Thank you so much, Pablo Gallaga.
Thanks, Neil.
All right. Thank you so much, Pablo Gallaga. Friendship, with the movie we discussed at the most length, will be out in May in select markets. Most markets, I would say. It's going to be somewhat of a wide release, although I don't really think it's a mainstream film, but it's a funny film, and it's a film worth seeing and worth talking about, and it was definitely worth talking to Pablo about changes at South by Southwest and what we saw at the festival this year. Even though South by is changing, it's always, it's representative of Austin in some ways. It's not Mardi Gras. It's more corporate, but Austin is more corporate than New Orleans, so it makes some sense. And also, thanks to Stephen Garrett for talking to me about Black Bag, which is playing in theaters now, and you should check it out. You should always go to the movies. You should go to the movies every day. I go to the movies every day, and I'm a very healthy person for it. I'm Neil Pollack. I'm the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. Please check out the site. We publish content almost every day, and we bring you this excellent, excellent podcast almost every week. Book and Film Globe is a product of Sea of Reeds Media, which also owns two independent bookstores in New Jersey, the Bookhouse in Millburn and the Bookhouse in Long Branch on the Jersey Shore. You should check it out, or you should use those books as your referral codes at bookshop.org, which is the place to buy, independent place to buy books online. Thanks again for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.